In here, we pour whiskey.
You were that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Whiskey Ginger. My guest today is one of my favorite people on earth. I say it for all my guests, but I mean it, especially with this one, Mr. Tom Arnold.
Oh,
Tom,
thank you, buddy.
Thanks
it's
for
great
coming,
to be,
man.
Who was on before me?
A guy named Brian Callen.
Oh, I know Brian.
There's been some good people on here.
I know Brian.
Alexandra Daddario came on. Ben Harper, the musician, came on.
Oh, geez, you have a full load.
We got a full load.
Yeah.
We have a full load. That's what
yeah,
we like
that's
to
fantastic.
Say.
Well, it's good to see you.
Good to see you, bud. How are you?
I'm good.
You complained that the area was sketchy, which it is.
It is sketchy. Well, it's sketchy because you gave me the address like an hour ago. You called me last night.
Yeah.
And you're like, first of all, you called me when you got the show. And you go, you got to get you out immediately. And then you disappeared for however many months. And then you called me last night. Yeah, we got to get you out immediately. And I'm with the kids, so I immediately FaceTime you back because I know you're in the middle of something.
I was at the gym.
I know, but I knew you couldn't talk, so I FaceTime you to FaceTime because I'm with my crazy kids and I wanted to put you on the spot. But
your life with your kids now is maybe the funniest thing in the world.
Well, it's also people think, oh my God, Tom Arnold's insane. He's doing drugs all day. He's a crazy person. I do have an insane life, but it's with a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and it is crazy.
Is
it not crazy?
Than drugs.
It is way crazier.
Yeah.
It's way more dangerous. You got a little taste of it. It is intense. I think my old life, prepared me for it. Like you never know who's going to come through the door, what's going to happen with the old, with the crazy, with the drugs, with these kids. If you prepares you for these guys, they're coming at you.
Yeah.
And
you think when you were using and partying that was like that prepared you mentally to have crazy ass kids doing fun.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I think it's funny because I'm getting a divorce, which has been a long time coming, and the kids and I have been we've been in the house. We've been observing. You know, it's the day that my wife moved out. The kids and I are watching the trucks, and my son's like, Dad, they're stealing your stuff. And I'm like, no, son, it's wonderful. Your mom's going to have her. And I'm like, wait a minute, maybe they are. So we went to the package store.
Stealing your shit.
But you know, my daughter has never seen, she's three, never seen her mother hug me. So it's not like and my son's always like, hey, something will happen. And be like, Dad, Mom hates you. I go, no, dude. It hasn't always been that way. So I have a big, because I'm an asshole, I have a giant picture of their mother hugging me on my 50th birthday, like so in love with me. And it's bigger than your whiskey ginger.
It's huge.
But it's so far, and I had it bolted. Like, there's been times when she's literally trying to rip it off the wall. It's bolted. I'm not kidding at all.
No,
in the beginning of our master bedroom, it's the nicest picture. Because, you know, in 11 years, there was a lot of nice stuff. And we have these kids. And then when somebody gets angry, you know, they want it. But because you have the kids, you tell the story of how they were, you know, first of all, you always love the mother of your kids because you love your kids. It's just
a part of them.
It's physiologically impossible not to.
Sure.
So, and so you, I spent a lot of time saying, no, Jax, let me explain. She was madly in love with you. You can't tell now, but, you know, and so I end up telling the stories that I had, the pictures and my kids and I spent a lot of time. And last weekend we watched my daughter's birth. She said, now I came out of mommy's belly. And I said, so I started with
not
her
really.
Mom, you know, how we went to the hospital. I showed me taking her out of her mommy's belly.
Oh, wow.
You know, and then going home and getting Jax and bringing him down to meet him.
Wait, you have it on tape?
Yes, of course.
And
I have no. This is weird. I have everything for the day they're all born. I have been at like
filming it all.
Apparently, I have.
Yeah, it's all there.
It is all
like
there.
A database. Did you save it?
Now we're getting it all with Ben, my assistant. You saw the assistant I have here.
Yeah, how old is he?
Is he 20.
Is he legal?
He's very young.
He's
lives
like a
with his parents.
Year old boy.
I know, but let me explain.
But he lives with mom and dad.
She was the head of child psychology at UCLA. You have to work with children if you're in my house. That's not a joke.
Right.
You have to. You can be my assistant, but then you have to either work at the Hess Kramer Jewish Kids Camp. You have to have experience with kids because my kids are in my office, in my life, and because of what's going on at the house, you have to be a witness. No, I'm kidding. You have to. So he's great with kids. He's a great young man. He's an actor. He's also my assistant, and he's also, he's wonderful with the kids. There's a lot going on.
He's good with kids.
He's great with kids.
He's got that look. He's got that like it was like almost like Beatles Bieber haircut. Here, Ben, come to the door so I can see what you look
Ben,
like again.
Ben, come here. Look right how nice of a guy he is.
Yeah, yeah, he's a sweet
kind
guy.
Got an Abe.
He could be a really nice guy or like a creepy Amish kid.
Well, for sure, creepy Amish. Creepy.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Are you? Where are you from? Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, he'll be. They had a lesbian living in his house that got married last week.
He kind of looks like a lesbian.
He definitely does. He definitely does.
Could you pop in real quick in the frame just so they can look at what you look like? Come stand in the middle of us and look at that camera.
He's a very nice guy.
Just get down on your knees real quick.
Oh my God.
You're used to. I'm sure.
Very nice guy.
There you go. A nice sweet little lesbian boy.
Very nice guy.
We should rename it.
Very nice guy.
Get the fuck out, man.
Yeah. He's such a nice.
He's a nice
young man.
He's a nice guy.
Yeah. He really is.
So he's at the house now full time with you and the kids.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's at the house during the day and. He
sure.
works and he's part of our adventures. My son, let me explain this. I've been cleaning out the house too for the last year because we're selling it. So I throw out all my old movies. My son fishes them out of the garbage and puts them in his room. And so he has all my old, a lot of it's on VHS. Throw it in the garbage because I get rid of it. He takes them out and stacks them in his room, which my ex-wife hated. He's got the Tom Arnold library up there. Ben will back me up. So we bought him a VHS player for his room and he has movies. Night with five movies. So the first one he put in, Ben, back me up on this. The first VHS he put in to watch, and Ben was with it because he set it up, was a PSA about child abuse by me. So the first
thing that was the first thing he watched.
Yes, and then
it's a good
so
foray
that was
career.
The first thing, and then so I wind up there, and they're on the part where children that murder their parents. So I didn't want to say anything, but I'm watching it with my two kids, and they're really interested in it. I'm like, these guys are going to kill me. But every night before bath, we watch a movie. My son has movie night. He calls them movies, but they're old appearances of me on shows that I forgot about.
Oh, wow.
And like Dennis Miller had a talk show. Like, I don't want to see this, but I watch it with my kids.
Yeah.
I forgot. And my kids are like, Daddy, were you a cowboy? Because the way I dress, I'm like, no, but, and my daughter's like, oh my gosh, why was your face white? Because they've never seen me without a beard, my daughter.
Oh,
and
wow.
Just how different I looked.
Right.
And I'm on.
They see you through the years change.
Yeah. And I would have forgotten about it, but also, like, back me up with this. I had an autobiography. There's 150 copies of my autobiography. And I said, throw them in the trash and get, who needs that? My son fished them all out.
150 and books
this
out of the trash.
I have documentation on this. My in-laws had moved in to support my wife. It was horrible.
Yeah, fun.
And God bless them, though. And so they were sitting in the living room just scowling at me, just lined up scowling. And my son took unbeknownst to me and my daughter, built a wall with those autobiographies facing them, my face. This is no, I took
That's
a
metaphor,
picture.
By the way.
It really is. Yeah. And then you can see on my Instagram what happened. And he was in there. He found some coins with my face on it and said, my dad was a king. And I came in and found those coins. I go, no, that's from a Mardi Gras. I go, guys, I was King Bacchus.
I was king of the tits.
But yes, I was king of the tits. And boy, you could do anything. King Bacchus, if you ever get an opportunity, it is the biggest honor in the world. But Ben will back me up on this. This is all true. And so one of these days, and it's funny as can be funny, but these kids, you know, it's so anyway, in his room was stacked, and there's 2,000 Gardens of the Night DVDs I didn't set out for the Oscars, and that's a child abuse movie, which I hope they won't
that's
watch.
That's good to have around.
Well, it's a really dark one where I played
Pop
a pedophile. Yeah, they don't know that. But
you want to watch a movie before bath time, bud?
Yeah, and you know the kid, Evan Ross, who's the star of the kid in it, his daughter, it goes to school with my kids, and it's Diana Ross's son.
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
And so we see each other, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, people I'm close to people that I'm in pedophile movies with, whether it be Kevin Seegers or Eddie Furlong.
How many
pedophile
child movies have you been in?
I raped Eddie Furlong in Animal Factory.
Fun.
Which is a Steve Buscemi Dragon. Really dark, really good movie. I it was rape. And then Kevin Seegers, a brilliant actor. He was my sidekick in Guardians of the Night, but he really, when I was an adult, he was 8. So really, you can't really call it a sidekick. And then we grew up together. He was old. He stayed with me until he was an adult too, which is good. And that was a great movie where John Malkovich was a good guy and I was the bad guy, which you don't see.
He was the good guy.
Yeah.
For like the first time in his whole career.
Yeah.
He's never the good guy in anything
he
does. He always plays this evil, dark, angry. Yes. Yeah, but he's so fucking good at it.
Yeah.
Is it because he's actually a good guy in real life?
He's a funny guy. Boy, the makeup room, he is so funny with, and he has every day with the makeup and hair people, he had a care. He would get running things, and you're like, because you know, as a comic, you want to be, you want to just know you're the funniest.
On set, whenever you're on set, you want to be the funniest guy.
Yeah.
Who's the funniest actor you've worked with that, like on camera or perception wise, was not funny, or like that's not their thing, but off camera was hysterical? Is there somebody who was really, really good off camera that you were like, fuck, they're so funny, but that's not who they are on camera?
Oh, geez. Let me just think, boy. I'm going to have to think.
The reason I asked that is because like there's only been a handful of people that I've worked with over the years that like that surprised me with, maybe they're super fucking funny.
Yeah.
And we get on camera.
Yeah.
They couldn't, there's no comedic timing whatsoever.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they're off and it's not part of their world, but you're like, wow, in real life, you're actually really fucking funny.
Like who? You?
I don't want to call them out because now I'm going to shit the bed with them. Now, because I said they're not good on camera, funny wise.
Oh, I see.
They were hilarious off camera, but it was supposed to be comedy.
Yeah, but that's why you have a podcast. You'd be honest.
Yeah, you're right. I'm gonna drown everybody.
But still, would you rather be funny in real life than on camera?
I mean,
except if you're an actor.
Yeah, yes, but for me, as a comic, you want to be always hilarious. But for an actor,
but
it's
do you think they give a shit what you think about how they are on camera? Okay, good. They call them out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
You know, I've been in 130 movies. Do you know that?
I looked it up on IMDb not too long
ago.
They
don't even have them all. They don't even have them all.
I think there's more than that listed. Well, probably. Like 160.
And four good ones.
what are the four good ones that you think?
Well, I think there have been more than four, but. You know, I liked Animal Factory. I like the one with Maggie Gyllenhaal. What was it called? Happy Ending. The Don Roos.
True Lies.
True Lies. 9 Months, which was with Robin Williams and Hugh Grant. Those guys.
Both dead.
Jody Cusack. Jody Cusack.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, you ever get a chance to work with her. She's great. Julianne Moore was in that, too. There's been... you know, people like the movies like Carpool and those kind of movies. And I'll tell you, there's a movie called The Stupids that you either hate.
The Stupids.
Or the people that love it. And it was a movie. But if you look at that movie, when I look at that, you know, not that I look at it, but there's seven huge directors in it. Like Robert Wise played My Next Door Neighbor. He won the Oscar for The Sound of Music. John Landis directed it. And he has all these friends that are directors that he wants to keep up their insurance and the acting in SAG.
So he just put them in.
Yes, like Costa Gravis, David Cronenberg, all these different guys. Adam Atoyan. All these different guys would show up and they'd be acting with me because they're his friends. And because it's also cool, and Norman Jewison, all these, they're in that movie, and it's based on children's books, The Stupids, and it's actually people that love it,
yeah.
And people that went to the theater to pay money did not love it, but you know, it's funny. It's funny what people like.
Yeah, but the theater is open. The theater can be a bus for great cult classic. That's usually what happens, right?
Yeah.
Like I remember hearing all those stories about how Caddyshack was a fucking torrential nightmare. Those guys hated that fucking movie.
Right.
The studio was so angry that they were going to have to put it out because they had spent so much money that everyone felt like ashamed of their work in it. What? Less than 10 years later, people were like, oh, this is actually pretty funny. Then 20 years later, people were like, this is one of the funniest fucking movies that's ever been made.
Right.
I think that happens with cult classics.
Well, think about this, too. You're Tom Arnold, and you've grown up with Animal House and, you know, Trading Places and American Werewolf in London Coming to America. And John Landis said, they say, I want you to start a movie directed by John Landis. And you're like, you fucking right, I'm going to do that.
Would never say no.
And let me tell you something. That guy loves making movies. And he gets to the set, and they're like, you know, and I read the book, and Brett Forster, I think, wrote the screenplay, and I was like, yeah, this isn't quite, we'll get it there. We can make it, you know, and so it didn't quite work for me because I don't get that. Yeah. But you know what? I'll tell you what, I stayed in that character. because of John Landis, I'm like, I believe in you. I'm going to stay in this, and... Man, I stayed in it.
You did.
Yeah, so I'm honored that I got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it was fun, and you know, it is what it holds up. There's no...
Stupids, I need to see it.
The Stupids, yeah.
Now, for context for people, the reason that we know each other is because we did a TV show together, internet box television show for Yahoo that... couldn't have been more dysfunctional and upside down and backwards.
It was. The most. But you know what? We bonded. You and I.
It was
and
a great
I love you.
For you. And me. Yes.
You and I. You know. Because of that. there's a million stories. I mean, what a weird.
Can I say one story?
Yes,
real fast?
Of course.
I want to cut you off because it made me laugh the other day. I was dumping a fucking. It was called. It was called Sin City Saints. It was about a basketball team in Vegas. Whatever. Tom was my. I was this co-owner of this basketball team. Tom was my best friend, liaison, fix it man, everything. He was my like the brains behind my blunders. He figured everything out. And there was a scene we were in a nightclub and this tall actor, I can't remember his fucking name to save my life because I'm so out of it, but he had one line to get through after this long exchange, and Tom is waiting in the back for him to get it out, and the line was, do you know what it is?
Remind me.
I'm Batman.
Yes.
Oh, I'm Batman now. That's all it was. It was talking about, it was this play on like trading jersey numbers or some bullshit, and like, well, you're Batman to the Robin, and Robin's Batman. All he had to say was, I'm Batman now. I have a clip that the editor sent me because I laughed so fucking hard.
Yeah.
The kid couldn't say it three fucking times. Yep. And we had a long scene before it set up, so you have to finish the scene. Tom yells so loud. I'm going to fucking post it after this.
Yeah.
Because he goes, the kid's like, I'm so sorry. And Tom, he goes, I'm Batman! I'm fucking Batman! And the kid goes, I'm so sorry. He goes, it's okay! It's okay! We were so frustrated. Because we had so many frustrating moments on that fucking show. Sometimes it was fun, and sometimes it was so fucking annoying. It was hard to get.
Well, also, was that the character? I think it was Wang.
Woo, woo, woo.
Yeah, that was Woo. Now, first of all, I come from the sports world.
Yeah,
and he's supposed to be this giant 7 foot. And I'm like, dude, first of all, he's got a cast on his leg. He can hardly walk.
Yeah, he broke his fucking leg while we were shooting.
And he's like 6'2", and we're supposed to pretend he's this amazing
giant. Yeah. He was supposed to emulate Yao Ming. That was the joke.
Yao Ming.
He was supposed to be Yao Ming.
Yeah.
Yeah, he breaks his fucking leg. And then turns out that he lied. He couldn't play basketball.
You could just kind of tell. That was also, that factored into my. And he couldn't play basketball, and also he couldn't say one line.
Real fucking easy. But there was a lot of frustrations for us on like for stuff that was happening. But we bonded because we got along so well, and we joked so incessantly about what was going on. And maybe my favorite story that I've told a lot of people that made me laugh was we would go down to the gym together.
Yes,
because we were living. Yes. We lived in fucking Caesar's Palace, which is crazy.
And we filmed in a casino.
Casino. And we would go to the gym, and oftentimes you'd get bothered. Well, you get bothered a lot in the hotel. It'd be hard for us to walk around without you getting bothered.
Well, I mean, people recognize.
I mean, fans.
Oh, sure.
It's nice, but it's also at some point I can even feel you going.
I just want
to get to the fucking elevator.
Right.
But you would get bothered in the gym quite a lot. Yeah. And then you told me one night, I said, oh yeah, I'm going to go to the gym. And you're like, you know, I'm going to call that front desk and have them bring a fucking elliptical or whatever up to my room. Because you just couldn't do it anymore.
They set up a gym upstairs. I was like, you know what? I'm going to have set up a kitchen upstairs too. And I started because I was like, I am not going to go downstairs at all except to go to work.
Yes.
And that's what I eventually...
Well, it was smart because going downstairs was not good. Because, first of all, you don't drink anymore. You don't do any of that shit anyway.
Right.
But, like, even for someone, I like to have a couple of drinks. But to go downstairs means you're in a casino setting. Immediately, you're in this dirty world. It's like you can't just...
You really are.
You can't just go have a meal and hang out.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. Like, you're in this seedy, gross world, especially because we were there... Every day, we stayed there for an extended period of time. It's not like we were there on the weekends. We're there on Tuesday when it's like the scrum of Vegas coming out. It's fucking gross. So you saying that, you're like staying in your room. I was like, that's the smartest thing he's ever done.
And yet we were with a woman who is like, we're all complaining and she's like, Malin.
Yeah.
And she's like crystal clear. Yep.
Doesn't care.
Got it together. Yeah. You know, but what's funny is you're such a nice guy and everything was nice. And then at a certain point you snapped. Because I snapped on day one. I was being an asshole and you're nice. And then there's a certain point I looked at you and you're like, it was over. Like
I
you're
broke.
Not taking any shit from anyone. Like you've turned and then you start agreeing with me. I agree with Tom. And there's a certain point where you said that in front of the producers. And I'm like, oh shit, it's on.
Because it was real. Because at some point the frustration was so high for me that I was taking it on the chin every fucking day. It was like I was in a bukkake scene of fucking just taking it every day of like, oh, I guess I'll do it. Until finally I got so fed up that when you would, you know, you and I would talk, and when you say stuff, I'd go, yeah, man, he's fucking right. Yeah, this is so annoying. We can't do this anymore.
Remember the Ferris wheel they're trying to shoot? The camera they had to get at a certain point. There's this giant Ferris wheel.
Like, in Vegas, it's the biggest fucking Ferris. You know what it is. It's like behind the, behind like whatever the fuck, the circus or something. No. Whatever the fuck it is. It's the big Ferris wheel. Yeah. We had to shoot on that fucking thing. And it takes, what does it take? Like 10 minutes to go around or something.
Boy, it was a big plan. Before we shot, they're like, man, this is going to be so awesome.
Yeah, that's
Anytime you hear that from the producer or director, you're like, oh, this could be so fucked up. Yeah. It's because they're going to fuck this up. They're going to have to wait. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So we're trying to get on this thing to get it going. Meanwhile, they have to load a crew onto these fucking pods.
Yeah.
And if they fuck up, we have to go all the way the fuck around until they come back.
That is the problem.
So, of course, we're trying to do this the right way one time. But they literally can't stop it. The hotel company was like, we cannot stop it because they go slow enough where they just have to keep it going. But we took so long to just get on these fucking things with a crew that by the time we went to shoot, we almost went over the time that we were supposed to be the whole time.
Oh, yeah,
time.
I remember that.
It was almost
they kept
the whole
calling
fucking
me.
Time.
I was supposed to come into work, and they're like, not quite. I can see the reflection of you
three
guys.
3 hours later.
In the hotel across the street. I can see it was how slow. I was going, you know, that might be it. We were filming True Lies, and Arnold Schwarzenegger and I, we are solid buddies to this day. You know, that's rare.
Yes.
You and I are friends.
Yes.
Arnold Schwarzenegger and I are tight, and we bonded immediately. We knew each other before that movie, but we bonded immediately, and he's such a quality guy, and I'm a, you know, it was my first, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I thought, oh, I could just, you know, and I, thank God I did, because, but there was a little bit of, the movie went on and on, and Jim Cameron is a great guy, but it went on and on.
You're saying the shoot went forever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 3 months, and it went 7 months.
Seven months?
It is so complicated. We were in a helicopter down in Florida, and what was happening was these Harrier jets were supposed to fly behind us, and I couldn't see them because I was supposed to go, here they come, but I couldn't see them fly. The timing was supposed to be just right where Jim shot it over my shoulder, and I missed it the first time, and they had to go down the base and turn around, and I missed it the second time because Arnold and I are talking, and then Jim Cameron, I hear him go, motherfucker, if they fly by you again, that's $50,000. And I was like, oh, fuck. And I nailed it the third time just because, but there was a few of those Jim Cameron ones were like, he just used to get so fucking.
What's another one where you pissed him off like that?
Oh, Billy. I mean, I enjoyed the shit out of him, yeah. But he would get pissed, and he had the bullhorn, and he would start screaming into it, and then the siren would go off, and he broke a lot of bullhorns. But I love him. He blew up the 7 Mile Bridge. Like, yeah, Arnold's like, do not show up late for work, because that'll be the day we, you know, because I was showing up. I was like, this motherfucker's never going to be on time. Why would I show up? He's like, that'll be the day they need you. And so they're blowing up this bridge. And then finally he's like, get in here. They're going to blow up the bridge. And we're waiting 3 days on our trailer to blow up the bridge. All of a sudden I hear, boom, 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 boom. And then I hear Cameron, God damn it, that was not right. Fuck that. And they had to rebuild the bridge and blow it up again. So that's the kind of shit, because he knows what he's doing. So
they rebuilt the fucking bridge just to blow it up again?
Yeah.
Jesus
Christ. But check this out. So Arnold Schwartz, don't record this. I'm kidding.
Okay, we'll turn it
off.
No,
here's the best. Bill Paxton. Let me tell you something about Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton was the funniest guy in the world. Bill Paxton knew Jim Cameron from before.
Right.
They go back, like Arnold and I are this, like this, and Bill Paxton and Jim Cameron go back to day one when they worked for Russ Meyer or whoever, and the thing about Jim Cameron is he does know how to do your job better than you, because he started off distressing tables, and when he says something about that light, he'll climb that fucking light thing and fix it, because he knows how to do it. So you know when he gets intense, it's because the movie's got over and he's put all his money back in the movie and put everything on the fucking line.
Sure.
Whether it be Titanic, whatever movie, the studio said, fuck you, Jim Cameron, and he said, I'll put my whole fucking career and everything I own on this. And that's how he is. So
that's why it works.
He gets
the way
a little
it works.
Crabby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he was always good to me. I mean, he was like, fuck it.
Tell me about Bill Paxton.
Tell me about Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
So we're in Washington, D.C., and we're filming on Constitution Avenue. That's a big, that's front of the Capitol there.
Yeah.
And fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger. Bill Paxton, I love to make him laugh. He's in the backseat. I'm in the front with this SUV. Arnold's driving. And Arnold fucking is an immigrant. So he fucking loves America, like over loves it. Like it fucking. And so Bill Paxton in the back, and he would laugh. I'd make fun of Arnold that fucking Bill Paxton would die. So anyway, Arnold's like this. A light went out. We're on the street. They got the street block. There's 500 people watching over here. Yeah. The light goes out. Arnold's like, you know what? That's going to take 20 minutes. I'm going to take you guys on a tour of the monuments. And so he takes us out and seeing the monuments. We've seen it in Washington, D.C. Sure. It's impressive.
Yeah, it's
you
nice.
Get a little tingle. But seeing him through the eyes of a fucking immigrant, like especially Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's fucking annoying. He's like, oh, guys, there's a fucking Lincoln Memorial. Look at that. Fantastic. And he's taking us on the, and I'm looking at Paxton like, God damn it. And he goes around the corner. And all of a sudden, we come back to our spot. I see James Cameron in the middle of the street like this. What? And he's standing right. And James Cameron is not like a regular director. Like, he's a 6 foot three fucking raw bone
dude.
Yeah. And he is fucking pissed. And I think Arnold, you know, because Arnold never fucks up. And it didn't take 2 minutes or 20 minutes to change the light. It took two this time.
Oh, shit.
So they've had the street block there. And that's a huge deal.
Out front
there.
Of the fucking Capitol.
That's right. Yeah, and so he pulls up and James Cameron gets in front of the car and he comes around and whips my door open and fucking starts climbing over me to get to Arnold. I fucking slide out of there and he fucking gets right on top of Arnold and he's like, motherfucker, you fucking pull shit like that, you're gonna have fucking Paul Verhoeven finish this motherfucking movie. And then I fucking slink back into the car and I sit next to Arnold and I'm like, hey, you gonna take that shit for that asshole? Like, and he's like, you know, I fucked up, all right? But Bill Paxton is just fucking dying.
He loved
it. I go,
shit.
Look at, God damn it, look at all these people. They're watching Arnold. They're taking pictures of that shit. That's fucking sad. And I just stayed on. He was, because Arnold's words, they never fucked up.
But he takes a lot of shit from you because you're so close to him. Like, you can fuck with him, but a lot of people don't fuck with him.
Well, right? He fucks with me, too. But here's the thing.
But
I fuck with him when he fucks with me because it's so stupid.
Yeah.
But he's the fucking most decent person. He genuinely, he gets up every day as if he's running for office.
Right.
He goes out, like, well, we give out 10,000 gifts every Christmas, and I think that's a huge deal down in South Central. And then he goes and does something. He'll go to a fire station, or he'll call me. Here's the best. He doesn't know this. This is a podcast story.
Yeah.
I'm doing this podcast called Two Girls and a Mic or something like this. They review smart women. They review porn. They reached out to me.
Love it.
And but they review it like seriously. And they said, we review Who's Nayland Palin. It's from 2008. It's a Sarah Palin movie.
Oh, right.
And so my assistant before bed, his buddy, they're all buddies. They come from the synagogue. I get the same guy, group of guys. I say to him, we got to get this part for Who's Nayland Palin. And let's watch it. I was like, oh, I shouldn't watch it with my assistant in the office. That's a porn.
That would
look bad.
Yeah.
You know, they're working with my kids. So I watch this thing because these women are very smart, but they're very attractive and they think I'm cool because of politics.
Right.
And I'm like, I want to be cool with these women. I'm going to do the podcast. So we set it up. It's a Saturday and they were all on the face. We're doing it at my house. And then Arnold, I see somebody FaceTimes me on my iPad. And I don't know what to do. And I open it. It's Arnold. And he's like, hey, motherfucker, let's go down and give some turkeys away at the goddamn Holodeck Center on Monday. I go, oh, fuck, I forgot it was Thanksgiving. He's like, hey, fucker, what are you doing? I go, nothing. I go, okay, I'll see you, fucker. All right, bye. He's a part of that podcast, Nayland Palin. It's in there of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He's not Nayland Palin.
But he doesn't feel
it. He has no idea.
It's so bad because it's Sarah Palin who fucking hates me. And it's part of it. And it was, but also, it's his fault because he asked me the last minute to go give away turkey.
That's what he gets.
If he called me before, so he's part of a porn podcast. It's so bad, but our friendship.
He'd be proud. I feel like he'd be proud.
Well, first of all, I said to them, imagine if he were actually a part of it, the fucking comments he would make about that.
Holy shit.
Yeah, then we'd be like fucking really disgusting.
I would love to hear him on that.
Oh, my God.
I have heard.
But, you know, Nayland Palin holds up.
It's good, huh?
I tell you what, the Russian guys, it's about the Russia story.
Yeah.
And the woman that plays that Lisa, started by Space Art, and she's wonderful. We're friends now. She's fucking awesome.
She's good enough.
Her, she's built she's athletic, and she's amazing as Sarah Palin.
Because this is more of like a feature than is a porno.
Oh, it's a feature. And they shot it 3 days, man. 2.5 days.
Really?
In 2008. And look at the movie.
James Cameron did this. Nayland Palin,
I'll tell you, it's better. The quality of what we shot, the whole fuck. And I'm not kidding. You got to watch it.
It's that good.
It really is.
Nayland Palin.
And the storyline is not so bad. And you know what? It holds up. There's a lot of lines in there. You go, that's today.
Right.
That's what's going on in the world today. Watch it. And
Nayland Palin.
Who's Nayland Palin? They spell it different.
because they don't want to get fucking sued.
Yeah.
Can they get sued for that? Isn't it satire?
Of course
parody?
They get
parody?
Sued.
Porno's parody. It,
well, this one is.
Yeah.
But, you know, you change it a little bit. You definitely have to change it when she's running for office.
I guess.
Yeah, because she looks a lot like her.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
How many Hicks do you think it was real?
There's I don't know, but Sarah Palin had just tweeted at me because I'm fighting with that. I always feud with the NRA.
Yeah.
And I did.
She tweeted at you recently?
Yes, right that weekend.
What did she say?
Because I said, I'm feuding with the Dana Loesch for the NRA because my general thinks she's an idiot. They're idiots. And I said a fact. It's a fact. 80% of gun owners shoot a member of their own family or, you know, because I want them to go, how outrageous. Tom Arnold, because they'll just start attacking. Sure. And she, you know, I do these facts like that because they're trying to say how many black NRA members there are. I go, there are 5 black NRA members. Prove me wrong. And they can't. They could, but they try. There's millions of people coming at me. Well, I know a guy. No, show me his picture.
Yeah.
I had that whole thing going. There is literally could not show me 5 pictures. And then when I said 80% of them shoot themselves, that, well, by God, that would be like, they're really genuinely arguing that it was on Fox News, the whole
thing.
How fun. It's so fun.
It's fun to troll.
But
right?
They also threaten your life. But I don't care.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't
care.
Come
get me.
Yeah, but they're ridiculous, so that's why we got to get stopped.
You got a lot of heat for the piss tapes?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going for the show, but it's still going. But it's worked. I mean, he's going to resign this summer.
But I mean, did you get a lot of death threats and shit from that?
Oh yeah.
Endless. What do you do to protect yourself?
The Secret Service has been in my house and the FBI, but it also goes both ways. So, you know, because I have the kids, I can't go to interviews with the FBI. I say you have to come here, and so my house is the safest place. And when these people threatened me, then we know who they are.
Right.
So the day that the MAGA bomber was, the day before he got caught, the Secret Service was in my house because I said I wanted to fucking wrestle Donald Trump. So I filmed a full hour. First of all, I wanted them to give me the speech they give him about, hey, when you're inciting violence,
right?
And that wanted to get me. Then we walked around the house and we coordinated with the FBI to make sure my house is safe. My house is a bunker, and it's also filmed. There is a lot of, you know, because if people are watching me from the outside, we're, you know, it's a double-edged sword. And so, number one, I don't care what people say. I'm not afraid of their threats. But we do pay attention. But I'm also going to live my fucking life.
Yeah, but you have to pay a little bit of attention.
Well,
because you have kids.
I pay more than I'm saying right here. Yeah.
Would you sacrifice Ben, your assistant? Would he be the body that would take a bullet?
Well, he is the body that takes
a bullet. Ben, would you take a bullet?
Ben thinks about it.
Yeah, you don't have a choice.
Ben, come
in here real quick.
Ben, just my 5-year-old son weighs 80 pounds.
Will you do me a favor? Will you grab me some of that Buffalo Trace, please?
Yeah.
I feel like I need to put you a little bit to work. Because you're here. He says,
yeah, absolutely.
Around. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, Ben has been, you know, the Papadopoulos is, we film it in the house. There's a bit of a Russian spy in the house. And
you've been privy to all this, right?
Yeah. Ben's privy to a lot of things. He probably has no, you know.
So he has no idea that he could get killed at any moment.
Right. Ben and Ben's other the guy two the assistant two assistants goes who's friends with Ben
and they were killed. The other
I just
assistant.
Say show up to work with your camera. And there'll be somebody there
right.
that smuggled a tape from the Trump Tower.
So he's replaceable, is what you're saying.
What's that?
He's replaceable.
Well, you know he's got a nice family and
right.
But Ben's what he is replaceable.
Yeah. Do you have any brothers?
There's a series of guys that are friends with they just keep replacing each other.
It's like the Matryoshka
one gets
dolls?
A job at ICM and then they move up and on. But they're wonderful boys.
Yeah. Yes, they all look
they
nice.
Really are.
They look sweet.
They really are wonderful.
He's on your team. But just know, by the way, you can get killed.
Yes.
Yeah. And be happy.
Yeah.
It's been a good run. How old are you?
I'm 23.
You lived enough life. 23 is long enough.
I'm hardening him up. I'm toughening him up.
Just beat moment. Him the shit out of him at night.
The same way I am with my son, I am with him.
Right.
You know, I'm...
Tough love.
Yeah. Tough, but also fair.
Right.
You know?
But you're sweet to your daughter, you don't give any toughness to.
Well, she's tough. I mean, she's...
Well, she's right. She beats your ass.
Well, do you think Quinn... She is... She when she's like, I don't pay attention, she'll actually stab. Go, oh, geez. She goes, oh, I'm sorry.
Gentle. She'll punch you in the head.
Well, stab me. I mean, there's something. She's vicious. She's wonderful. Let me tell you something. She is, we do this gig every day. Save Me, where she pretends she's falling off the bed and has her hand, and it is
oh, it's like
that
she's,
face.
Like she's hanging off a cliff.
Yeah, but you saw her on the edge of the seat chair. Yeah, like, it's getting crazy.
She looks like she's always about to get hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
But she'll walk up, but she's braver than her brother. Her brother's a brute,
right.
But she'll tear him apart. She'll say stuff, and she'll fuck with him. I mean, he's like, we'll do this, and she'll fly across the room, but she could say something, or him, and he'll weep. And she gets on top of the bunk. monkey bars, and I have to get under her like, don't.
On the top, yeah. Don't climb them.
Yeah, that, after school, I picked up at school, that, you know, now they do this thing where we want to play in the big playground because they know they fucking got me. Sure. So I'm the last, all the moms have left, as me and these two kids that are trying to walk on her, and she'll get up there and walk. And I'm like, honey, I love that you're brave. I do.
Yeah.
But you can't, like, rule number one, nobody gets hurt. Rule number two, no choking. Those are my only two rules I got with the kids. But you see her.
Those are the only two
she's
rules.
Just looking at me, and she's just, but she, you know, she goes to, it's, you know.
It's intense.
It is intense.
It's intense. What's the age difference?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. But they're very close.
They're best friends now.
They're best friends. But I also sleep with, listen, they both want to sleep next to me. They both want to touch me, but they can't touch each other. He's touching me. So we're in a bed, and it's dad doesn't get much sleep. And last night, all of a sudden, I hear a thud, and it's like, where's Quinn? Quinn fell. I go, Jax, you got to get Quinn. We had to Quinn up. And so I asked Ben, what did I ask you to get today? One of those big pillows to block the side
pillow.
Of the bed.
Yeah.
You know, we had one, but somebody...
Just get those rails. Like, old people have rails on the side of their...
Well, that we had that. Well, runners. That's what I say. We're keeping it for me. We're holding on to this. Listen, it's a borderline. It's very close.
Oh, for you.
Let me tell you what else happened. She asked me last night, Dad, why do you pee so much at night? I said, well, you know, I said, maybe I drink too much water because she knows I pee twice. And then I came back in the room. She had gone on PBS and had a video of the human body and was showing... Like, she's that smart.
She was getting an anatomy of why you piss so much.
Yeah, and that's showing really me funny. Why. And I was like, whoa, is that really why? She's three, but she is.
What?
It is. She's way smarter than her brother. You know, I'm
she
not even going to.
She might be smarter than you.
Oh, she's smarter than me.
Yeah. Oh,
she's
okay.
You know what she'll say to me in the morning? I picked her up at her mom's head, and she's like, did you rest last night? I go, what? Did you get rest last night? I go, yeah. She goes, well, I know you're alone in the house. Like this, and her brother's like, hey, give me my iPad, Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but she's that, you know.
She cares.
She cares, and she's never heard anybody say that to me. It's not like she heard her mom say that.
Right, she just is thinking that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really intuitive and forward.
Yeah, and I'm going to say one sad thing. This girl has, has these Disney characters where there's a princess and a prince,
sure.
and Olaf and the Frozen.
Love
and
it.
she acts those out. She'll say, you're the prince, Dad, and you're the this. And then she sometimes looks at families and she'll say, that's mom, that's you. You know, it's
right.
But the thing is, she has all these fantasies. But in her real life, got let down because she's never seen
right.
her parents and never even faked.
Disney should make a movie about divorce then.
Well, of course, but, and so I'm going to spend the rest of my, you know, I say, well, I'll spend the rest of my life making it up because I'm just going to be a great dad. I'm going to be a good dad. But, you know, kids get fucked over no matter what. I can say, people are like, well, she'll never remember this. Well, fuck that. Her day one experience is, well, what is a family? You know, what do we, you know, right. I could show her all the movies in the world, which I do, and say, you know, but when she goes to school and looks at these other, you know, other families
and shit. Yeah.
And sure, I could get a hot chick in there. By the way, her mom tried to write this between us into the agreement that, oh, all of a sudden she's like, I think Tom, you know, he's almost 60. She wrote this. He's almost 60. He can have a heart attack, so he needs a full-time daddy over there. Like, to find the body. And I was just about to go on stage at the Comedy Store. This is like the last week. And I called the lawyer and I'm like, you know what? Usually the wife is like, I got to make sure this guy doesn't have full-time daddy because that right, you start interviewing the hottest.
You know what happens with nannies.
Then you have a heart attack. You're like, I just died. I had the hot nanny. So it's always reversed. But, you know, things are great. I love being a dad. It is the best. I just love it. It's what I always wanted to do. You know.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can feel the way that you were when I first met you, and now I think you're the same. You're the same guy. You're the same lovable guy. But the one thing that I think is more obvious to me is you're happier about all that.
No, I'm happier about everything. I'm healthier.
That lifts all your shit.
I mean, it's everything. You know, this is the best life I've ever had. I love it.
You've lived a thousand lives.
I have.
You seriously have.
I have, and I'm so grateful that I. But it's all to get to here. It's right. all the lessons and all the, you know, because these kids need me every moment.
Oh yeah,
and they deserve it, and it's fun.
Right.
Like it's not like I have to teach them about life. It's like I'm learning who they are every day, and it's changing. And
right.
What a great thing to
and for you to raise kids at your age. You don't even feel like you're your age.
No, I know.
Like my grandmother used to say, this has been a story that many older people always say to me, is always like, you feel an age at some point, and then you kind of stick with that forever.
Yeah.
Like, you never really feel your age.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of just feel like a number, and that's just a number that you are. But like, you know, I've been told that people are like, no, I feel like I'm 40 my whole life. Like, it just kind of, something sticks with. So I know you don't feel your age at all.
No, I have a picture of my dad. My dad was a single father. My mom was crazy. She left, and he's 22. I'm 4. My sister's 3. My brother's 1. And I'm like, holy shit. How did that guy do? And so there's a lot of things I took for granted.
22-year-old.
Yes.
That's crazy.
You know, my mom, they were 16 and whatever when they got married, and crazy. And I said, how did that guy? But I remember it so much as coming back about the moments that meant the most. Like when he got off work and he got on the floor with us. That meant a lot. Or when he paid attention to something I was doing, like really paid attention.
Right.
Because they know when you want to be with them. They know when you're bullshitting.
They can feel it, whether or not
they
you're full of shit.
They can feel it. Yeah. It gives you a tingle in your spine.
Where did your dad work again? What did he do?
He worked at, he worked at a factory.
Because you worked at a factory when you were young too.
Oh yeah, I worked at Hormel at the meatpacking plant.
Yeah, at the meatpacking plant.
We worked there too. I worked on the kill floor for 3 years.
You slaughtered animals for a long time.
I did. I slaughtered 6,000 hogs. I'm a Jew. I slaughtered 6,000 hogs. My grandpa worked there 50 years. Gas house grab, and
but that's the only Jew in Iowa, by the way.
No, there's 4, and there's not enough to hate. I'm telling you, that's true. It's like
it was so minimalistic on the scale that nobody recognized.
Well, it's that, and the black guys in our class were the kings of the problem. You know, they were like people where I went to school. They're like, oh, you're black, you're Jewish, you're better than us. Oh, whoa, 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 you're different. Oh my God, you are the king of the. You're better than us. We are, you know, so you're
different. Did you actively tell people you were Jewish when you were a kid, or no, because it was
you did not actively know.
Well,
no. Let me tell you something.
All the kids around you were probably just Catholics or something, right, in the Midwest.
Yeah, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I'm acting like, oh, no, nobody cared. People cared. Yeah, you didn't tell. My grandpa was like, let's keep this on the down low.
Don't tell anybody.
We had, oh, no. You know, it was like a week in it. If I, I'm acting like, hey, everybody, it was cool. No.
It was the opposite.
No.
Jew?
No. Yeah. People, because they have that dumb, there's a lot of ignorant people. And,
sure.
You know, my uncle made the documentary, The Secret Life of Adolf Hitler, and he wrote the book. You know, he's from New York and did a lot of wonderful things and very proud of it's a while. I remember there's a couple of friends who just kind of looked, and they had High Holy Days in the back of Artie Siegel's Western Wear because they didn't have a temple. The guy'd come down, and Artie Siegel's the guy on TV. Hey, you get your jeans here. You get your gray jeans, you get your black jeans, you get your red, which is the most stereotypical Jew in the world. That people are like, that guy seems Jewish. Yes, that's Artie Siegel. But so he's just kind of kept it on the.
And that was the synagogue.
Yeah,
his
in the back of Artie Siegel's Western Wear. What a nice guy he was.
Yeah,
but there was just you just did it. Why push it? God damn it! You had so many Catholics and
there was
stuff.
Nothing but Catholics. Yeah, that's all there was in the Midwest.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, seriously. So, and because you're but in Iowa. It's all farmers and all old hardcore Christians and
but you know what, as I lived like that, and I had some terrible things happen when I was 4. My mother before she left, she set me up with this horrible male babysitter who was a pedophile, and bad things happened. And then my dad, we lived with my dad until I was 9 and a half, and he married the next door neighbor. And she was not a fan of mine, and it was rough. It was rough, and I ended up moving to my grandparents, got moved around. I was ostracized by my own family, and then I moved to my grandparents, and they're wonderful. My grandma's wonderful, but the first day I lived there, I came home with a black eye from school, and my grandma started weeping because she saw a black eye. Like, it's a black eye normal kids have from a fight.
Yeah, just,
and she was like, oh, my God. And I was like, oh, no, I can't live here either. Because she, but there was a.
You were going to get many more black eyes.
Right.
Yeah, that wasn't going to be your only fucking black eye.
Yes, of course, like a kid would.
Yeah.
But there was, she lived by St. Mary's church or whatever you call it, the Catholic.
Yeah.
It's a big, beautiful place. Yeah. And so I'd walk by there to get to her house, and every day there's a basketball court on the side. They had the new young, I almost called him a rabbi, but priest.
Yeah.
And he was in town, and he was out. He saw me walk one day by myself and came out and shot some baskets with me. And then every day, this young priest came out and shot baskets with me on the way to my grandma's. And it really made a difference in my life.
And you almost switched to Catholicism.
Yeah, no, but he took the time. this guy who was in fucking, people hated me at school, people hated me in my family, but this guy, I was a Catholic, everybody knows that, took the time to just sit there and shoot baskets with me. And on the way to my grandparents, and I didn't want to, my grandparents are old and, you know, creepy. No, they're old. And so I did not have a place.
Sure.
Nobody liked me. And I stopped there.
But that priest.
And he was a cool dude.
Do you remember his name?
I have it at home.
Father something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was.
But he did it. But okay, like, not to sound like this is a metaphor for the world, but that just goes to show you that it's not about fucking religion. It was just
not at all.
He was just a good guy.
He was a very good guy,
and
he knew. And that guy said, this kid needs something, and that's the best. It's absolutely not about religion.
Right.
And he was new in town.
Right.
And you know, he's new in town, but he, not that he needed me, but it's always good. But I'll tell you what, man, that stuck with me. And I'll tell you what, you do something for a kid, you like that, you know, something positive, you know, that sticks with him. You rape him like that other guy, I'll fucking hunt
Different
you
story.
Down.
Yeah.
I hunted that guy down when I got sober.
Oh, you did?
Oh, you know I did. He was a big religious leader. You could Google this story. And I confronted him at work, and he was a big, rich guy, and I walked into his workplace of work. I had my, you know, we got a private eye. We found him.
What was your plan? You wanted? You
well, I practiced, so I didn't fucking beat, you know.
I was just going to say, because why didn't you murder? You murdered him, right?
Well, first of all, I went back to my old neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I asked around, and it turns out he'd done it to other people, including his brother. It
wasn't a one-time deal.
Right.
Yeah,
so
then
I made a plan with my therapist. I practiced what I'd say, so I didn't get, you know, I'd already been trouble with fighting and stuff. And I was like, so my brother, who's my one brother's a bit of a, you know, it's like, he said, he tracked him down. He's like, there's where the fucker is. You know? And so I found out he'd moved on. And the worst part was he adopted boys, him and his wife. He's a big religious
shit.
He was about to, I was going to wait a little bit. And I practiced. And then he's like, he's about to adopt his fourth son right now. I'm like, I'm going.
Fuck.
So I'll tell you what, I'm tough. And I'm not afraid of this guy, but it was fucking a little scary. And then I get to a place, I walk into the reception area, I go, hey, and the woman's like, oh my God, it's Iowa. So she's like, oh my God, I'm here to see Terry Williams. And she's like, oh my God. She goes, I'll tell him. I go, no, don't tell him.
Yeah,
please.
Don't fucking
and
tell
I started walking down the hall, and he came out of his office. What a weird coincidence. And so I start my speech. I'm here to give you back the pain and shame you caused me as a kid. And I hadn't seen him since I was, you know, long
time. It was all rehearsed.
Yeah, practice.
Yeah, right.
And he kept on coming up on me. And my whole thing that I did this was because I didn't want to be back at Walmart in Ottumwa, Iowa, and have that fucker behind me going, see that famous guy? I fucked him. So I was like, I'm going to own this fucker. I'm going to find him. I'm going to confront him. So as he comes up on me, he gets right up on me, goes, and sticks his finger in my chest and goes, your memories are false. Like, I'm like, his fucker's been confronted before. And for a second, it scared me. Because I was four suddenly, and he was big, and I was like, I felt like that for a second, and then I was like, fuck that. And I took his head and was like, if you try to do that to me now, I'd break your fucking neck. That was the last part of the, and then I looked at his eye, and now he was fucking scared. And then I finished the rest of the speech, and people had come out of their offices, and they heard that, all these employees.
Wow.
And I left him there, and I ran out of there, and I fucking felt like $1 million. So I was like, called home, and I told Roseanne, I said, I fucking did it. I called my brother. And then I went straight across the street to the capital of Iowa, there in Des Moines. I went right into the governor's office. Terry Branstad, he's the ambassador to China now for Trump.
Shit.
But he was the governor. I said, hey, listen, man, this motherfucker is about to adopt his fourth child. You need to stop this right now. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? That's a federal offense, Tom. You get the fuck out of here. I'm going to pretend you weren't here. And we had a big, and then I was like screaming. You know, people walk into the yeah. Now like I was ahead of the game. And then I'm like, well, fuck you. Then you, anyway, so, but 4 days later, my brother called and goes, there was a paperwork snafu. He did not adopt. So this guy, who's a Republican, hardcore Trump guy, backed me up and made sure this guy could not adopt a child.
Right.
That happened. So,
well, that's how real people take child molestation.
Yeah. Like, fuck you, no, fuck it. This is the right rotunda of the Capitol. Fuck you, no, fuck it. Anyway, so then I had my farmhands. I thought, have I done everything I can? I thought, wait a minute. So I had my farmhands go 6 blocks around Terry Williams' house. Kid high on every pole, every signpost. And they did every other night for 6 weeks. put up a sign with his face, his crimes, and his address and his name.
Wow.
And did it 6 weeks in a row so everybody knew. Then I went on TV, I went on Oprah, and they go, I'm not going to say the guy's name, but let's call him right into camera, Terry Williams. Just begging that fucker to sue me. And 30 more kids came forward and confronted him after that.
Wow.
Including his own brother.
Is this guy dead?
I don't know. He's dead.
Yeah.
He's dead.
His life is dead. But he might be alive.
I don't know.
Fuck him.
But that's that part of his life's over.
Wow. Did you it's crazy because
But let me tell you something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when Jax turned four, a year and a half ago, Dr. Drew said, you know, when Jax turns four, you're going to have issues. I said, no, I'm not. I dealt with that. I fucking went down and get this guy. But when he turned four,
sure enough,
I looked at him. I go, holy shit. I was like that. Because when you're abused like that, you think, oh, it's in the back of your mind. You're like, oh, I was a bad kid, though. They couldn't be the adults because
right.
I was a bad kid. I looked right. at him like, holy, it's just shocking.
You blame yourself.
Well, it's shocking that somebody would do that to a fucking child.
Right.
Like, fuck. If the child looks like that, you could pretend, well, I was some kind of monster. Or I'm weird. Or and then you see it in your face.
Didn't believe you? Is that what it was, too? They didn't believe? Did people not believe you?
Or
did
well,
you
I didn't tell. It? I mean, you don't tell. First of all, he's going to murder my dad. He lived across the street and he had a rifle. He just aim it when my dad would come home and say, I'm going to fucking kill everybody has guns there. And he'd aim it straight down and say, yeah, I'm going to kill your dad, your sister, your brother. I had my little sister and brother.
Fuck.
And so, you know, he's a bad guy.
Did you see this documentary, Abducted in Plain Sight?
Of course.
And we were just talking about it. It's yeah. like, but that's the kind of thing that to me, it's crazy that things go on forever and ever and people know. Okay, so like if 30 yeah. people came forward, people fucking knew that yeah. this guy was a weirdo and a perv and a fucking sicko. Mm-hmm. But somehow, some way, these great manipulators convinced people that either it's not a big deal or it didn't really happen or it's not to be talked about.
Right.
And that to me was the most, that documentary made me sick. I was watching it on a fucking airplane getting nauseous because I thought, this guy was able to, without giving anything away, because it's so fucking good, yeah. you should watch it, Abducted in Plain Sight. But it's mm-hmm. also disturbing to think these parents of these children were so easily fucking manipulated.
Right, think exactly.
That this guy was like a friend,
yeah.
like a hero, like a buddy, a community right. leader. Like, it grosses you out, but also it makes you think, it's kind of like how cancer is in our society when you're like, oh God, you hear about cancer, but then you're like, it's not going to happen to me or my family.
Right.
And it's like, no, that shit fucking happens right. all the time.
Right.
That's so
And fucked. I'll tell you something about trauma like that. And people don't see people, they see women coming forward 30 years later, like, how the fuck did she... Let me tell you something. For the last 2 years, I've been in trauma therapy since my son turned four. And you go in there and you could smell the laundry in the backyard the day you were raped. The moment I could see the curve of the wood as I had my face slammed against the wall, and literally that moment is burned in your mind, and then you want to get the fuck out of that room. My goal was, I'm in that room, and every time I get into a fight or somebody has harassed me, I touch on that moment. Like, that's why I act out, like, bam, that's where I act from. I want to not react from that place right now, because that's sensitive. I know I got out of that room, by the way. He right. put this room behind the closet in the front. I know because I got out of there, right? So here I am. So we slowly walked me out of there, at least in the front porch where he has a gun and threatening my family, at least, you know, to the sunlight so I can react from there. Because I got out of that room and I need to get out of that room in my head that I didn't react from there. And that's what, you know, that's you trauma therapy. There's a lot of ways to do it, but you can't be locked in that moment. No. But you got to feel it's shocking how your brain,
yeah,
you know, because brain's pretty powerful.
Well, it's so funny. You could try to erase it with any kind of substance on the
oh
the
my world, God, of course,
but it won't work.
But I'll tell you what,
trauma will stay there forever. Yeah, or something.
But also what I did was split. I disassociated as a kid. You know, I also had that. You know, so it's been a problem occasionally as an adult.
Yeah.
Where as a kid, it saves your life
because right.
you're in the middle of this horrible thing, and all of a sudden you're in another place.
Right.
And then alcohol, when you first drink it, you're like, oh my God, I could, that takes me that place by just drinking this.
Sure.
I could be in this other world. And then you drugs, oh, this other world. And then it gets weird. And then it's like, it's confusing and you become, you're an addict probably in the beginning like I was. And then you can see how you would abuse it. That's how people that have been abused, because they disassociate to get out of that horrible pain. And then all of a sudden alcohol and drugs are like, oh, that's a freeway to that thing. That's a super trade. I'll just do that.
Right.
But it's never dealing with the original
Never. And problem. Also that thing is going to be there. So you have to just keep You just keep working on it because it's never going
to
go away.
Especially for me as a parent, I have to have worked on that.
Yeah.
And be the best parent I could be. And that, but I have to be sober and I have to, you know, so I it doesn't look like it because I'm fat, but this is the best I've ever been. So, you know, I have a million other things to do.
I think you look fucking great.
Every day, you know, whatever I can learn. I'm taking a seminar on how to say no to my children. That's going to be.
I feel like because you're a
guy that makes me cry already thinking about it.
Yeah. No, I know you. You could say no to any fucking adult about anything.
Well, for sure. Sure.
Yeah, but for your kids,
I get their face, but kid,
no way.
Well, I'll tell you the last story. I had guys the day my wife moved out. I had my group over to the house. I have a group of sober guys. We were upstairs having our little support group and in the master suite area. And all of a sudden, my buddy's like, "What's under the covers in the bed there?" I go, "Oh, that's Jax." They go, "Well, is he going to stay in here for the meeting?" I go, "Hey, Jax, you got to go downstairs." And he wouldn't do it. I go, "Well, I guess." They go, "No, Tom, he's yet. You got to make your son go downstairs." I go, "No, no. Well, it's been kind of rough around here." He goes, "No," they go, "they're all fathers." They go, "Tom, you have to make it." I go, "I don't know if I can." They go, That's now you're a father. He will appreciate it. And it was so hard. I had to go, "Jax, I got to make you go." Leave. It was brutal. And they're looking at me like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?"
But because you see it as a bonding experience that you're having with, like,
well,
it's
no, I just see it was hard. I thought I just like he's always around.
You love that he's there.
Ben will tell you, they're in there ripping. You know, it took a long time to go, "Hey, you guys can't destroy my stuff." You know, I get to have stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, okay."
But you kind of don't. So
well, but they be going through so much with the stuff at the house. Yeah. I got to compensate.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind.
Right.
But once I get it all ironed out, we're gonna have some.
If when he gets older, if he wants to go to a meeting and stuff like that, would you?
Well,
want
fuck
him to go?
Yes. Yeah. He can do whatever he. Yeah. I want him to know my
with
life.
You, I'm saying, does you if you're like, do you? Did, like,
oh my God! You, of course.
That's a bit. Yeah. My dad.
They can still sleep in the same bed with me their whole life. No, I mean, here.
Then I'm going to report
I always was like, yeah, my kid's going to have his bedroom because they have their own bedrooms.
Yeah.
And then because things started getting, you know, and I realized one day, oh my God, we are sleeping because we're all sleeping together in the bed.
Yeah.
You know, and then she goes, and they both want to sleep with me. We go through all this stuff. It seems weird. And then I end up on the side of my back hurts. I bottom of the bed. And the kid, and I'm looking at my kids. I get up and I go, but this is the life. Look at those babies.
It's a good fucking life.
It's the best life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the best life.
It's all worth it.
It is.
Yeah, all that shit's all worth it.
Of course, you know, it's what an honor.
Aren't you, but like, are you, and because this is your first two kids.
Yes.
Aren't you happy that you waited this long to have kids?
Well, I am happy that this is. I'm grateful.
Yeah.
I think this proves there's a God.
This is your belief? Yeah.
But this is, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I just think maybe it worked at the exact right time.
It did. Like, it did.
Say when you were younger.
Oh, my God. When I was 18, my girl, at the meatpacking plant, my 17-year-old girlfriend said she was pregnant. I was like, here we go, 50 years here.
That's it.
And I was so crazy.
Right.
Because at the meatpacking plant, like, your life was this. In the plant, you get in a fight, you get an argument, we'll settle it after work behind the union hall. Hell yeah, fist fight. Okay, everybody has to go buy a shot every night. Like it's a brutal.
Yeah, fighting.
Always, break always. Let me tell you night. Something. It's if you think I'm bad, like it's a brutal, you know, life. And that's how it was fun. And just drinking. You can't fight in the plant because your knives are so sharp.
Yeah, it would be kill murder. Each other.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Yeah.
You
but
know,
outside you just gotta smack it out, and then when people are done, you could just go drink it away.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something about guns. If you had a gun and I had my sticker knife, you couldn't get your gun out. You would be dead. The sticker is the most high paid person in a meatpacking plant. One little stick right here. That's all they do. It's a finesse job. They stick 6,000 times. That's 6,000 deaths. You would be bleeding out. I'd reach over as you reach for your gun. You wouldn't know what happened. It'd be on your neck like that.
Yeah.
And you'd be going, "Hey, Tom. Oh.
Were you a sticker?"
I'm dying. I stuck at the end. Man, you have to, that's the highest.
I was just going to say, that's got to be the most important.
It is.
And do your a lot life of accidents has to be so happen? Sure.
What's that?
Do accidents happen?
The only accidents are when you miss the jugular and that blood stays in the hog. The only accidents when it lives.
That's
if
bad.
That would be an accident. But I'll tell you what, they're surgeons, they're technicians. I'm looking at your neck really hard now. But it's like when they said, they'd see your service came to my house and I'm telling them I'm super cool. And they came because I said I would wrestle Donald Trump because he's in the WWE Hall of Fame. So I go, guys, come on. It's not like some guy. He's bragging about how he wants to body slam somebody. I know him. He's been on my sports show. I've been to the Playboy Mansion with him. You know, he all you know, I'll come to his event if he body slams me first. Then if you know, and then he said the second thing, you made a comment about next time Kathy won't be holding a fake head. Was that about Kathy Griffin? I was like, well, I didn't tag it to her tweet, but I was, you know, somebody's giving me shit. And I was like, listen, about the Kathy Griffin. I said, we're not good friends, but I support her. They said, what do you think about that picture with the head? I worked in a meatpacking plant on the kill floor. I don't like that. That's not my kind of humor. They said, are you going to show up at an event? And what if you show up in Iowa and you see him? Will you swing on him? I go, how the fuck? He's the president. I have this all the time. I go, he's the president. What are the odds I'm going to show up at an event and see him and swing on him? I go, if he swings on me, I'll swing on him. They said, another question, read this off. If you show up and you're like in the handshaking line, will you try to cut his head off? And I go, let me say you something. This is where they got, up till now, I go like this. They said, guys, I worked on the kill floor of meatpacking. This is where I'm trying to prove I'm not crazy, okay?
Yeah.
I worked on the kill floor of meatpacking plant. First of all, you know, I'd have to have, to cut his head off, I'd have to have two knives and a bone saw. And then also, you don't just cut a fucking dude's head off. You need another guy to turn him upside down by the angle. And I talked it through. And you can see there's two guys. There's one great big white guy and one black guy. The Secret Service guy's like this. And now, by now, I look psycho. And then you see me can't hang. I'll show you this tape. And now I really look like a fucking psycho that might cut the president's head off. Because now I've said exactly how I would do it. No, I would. You don't just cut a guy's head off. You have to take it.
It's not that simple. There's a whole process you got to go through.
I probably need another guy to turn him upside down.
Did they know that you were fucking around?
Well, no, at the end, then I started to talk. Well, first of all, I was serious.
Yeah, but I mean, did they know that you were mocking the question?
Well,
I mean,
of course, they knew that in the beginning. But then I went too far because I tend to talk too much.
Yeah.
Explaining why it would be so hard to cut somebody's head off because it takes a long time.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit.
You're just explaining logistics.
But also, I felt bad about that journalist for the Washington Post. The bone saw had 17 guys attack him.
Yeah.
You know, and that's I know how brutal that is.
It's fucked.
Because the truth is, I have cut a lot of heads off, not humans, but it is a brutal thing they did.
Right.
It's an inhumane thing they did. Even in a meatpacking plant, I felt my humanity. Eventually, you become
numb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. There are people that work there that are fucking sadistic. And you could tell the difference between your average guy that works there and he knows his job and he's justified in his head because we're farmers. This is what we do. This we raise animals. This is. And there are sadistic motherfuckers there. And we always get rid of them because they like it.
Yeah, they enjoy
and
it.
And you could tell it.
That shit's gross.
And we get rid of them. Yeah. I'll tell you that. There's some fucking sadists there. And I can remember as they came in, they usually start in livestock. And you can see something where they're fucking being cruel to the animals. You know, and people are like, well, you're going to kill him. You're going to shock him. You're going to, no.
Yeah.
Humanely. And there's a thing to it. And even as Jews, we worship them because what they give to us. I know it doesn't make any sense if you know, now thinking back, but I'll tell you what, those sadistic fuckers, we had a way of getting rid of them that was probably sadistic too.
Did you take them out back?
They horrible things.
Yeah.
We'd burn their, I mean,
go,
now there's a lot of things that we did because, you know, they had the blackface controversy and I thought about the blue balling we did the night before a guy got married where he chased him down the groom and he'd take his pants off and take it, pull his dick up and, you know, that blue that he put on meat to tag.
Oh, yeah,
put it on his balls and it's permanent. And it's just a really brutal thing because you have to tackle the guy.
Never comes off?
Well, I mean, like maybe in a year.
Year or two?
But I mean, he was usually fighting us, so it's like all over shit. And then he had to go to his wedding like that. But what the smart was to say, just do it to me.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of those guys.
Let it go.
But now that I think about it, that was probably some kind of sexual crime.
Well, yeah,
probably.
Yeah, that was.
Plus we did it in the, you know, in the.
But if you were on Hormel premises, you were fine.
We definitely were on Hormel premises.
It was definitely a fucking crime.
Oh, my God. You should see their face when they get in there. Like, they're looking around like, you guys are, no, we're not doing anything. Like, oh, my God. And then people start block off the exit.
I feel like I'm never going to get a Hormel sponsor, by the way. I don't know if there's a
Hormel. Yo.
No, I'm kidding. It doesn't fucking matter. Well, dude. Tom.
Buddy, I love you.
I love you, man.
I don't know. It's just you and it's wonderful.
Well, I love you.
And I love you too.
I want to thank you for coming. We're going to get back because it's Ben's bedtime. So
yeah, it's good.
All right, let's get out of here. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Whisk.